Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
No petrol, diesel motor can compare. So the performance stuff is, it's bollocks. It's just complete and utter bollocks.
Sure it is.
And I'm being told that I have to read another paragraph in this article here. And I think
the killer in that paragraph is that a bunch of these cars are made by American firms and not available to Americans.
Funny that, because it says, you know, that's exactly it. Adding insult to injury is the fact that 113 highly fuel-efficient models are unavailable to American consumers, are either made by U.S.-based automobile manufacturers or by foreign manufacturers with substantial U.S. sales operations such as Nissan and Toyota. And, I mean, this kind of stuff also came up in the argument, in the arguments on this program last night. But what I found interesting is I go and post links to these things saying, you know, none of this was discussed, you know. A nice attempt at actually opening up a dialogue, but the show was a complete and utter failure. And whether Gail reckons that, you know, they might not have been taking links, and that might be fair enough, but last check, my post was not, well, cleared by moderation. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I posted three, so it's obvious that I don't have a financial interest in any one of these things. So, you know, I'm hoping that even if they didn't print it, that the folks at SBS, whoever's moderating, put a little note going, oh, we should check these out and see what they're about. And there's even a guy in Melbourne who has designed another air motor. Designed for smaller applications. It's another compressed air motor system. The entire motor weighs 5 kilograms. So, you know, 11 pounds. Jeez. And it's strong enough to drive forklifts, small construction vehicles, and they reckon it's scalable. And the guy has an entire fleet in a few warehouses where all of the forklifts and, you know, the little buggies to get around and whatnot are all run on compressed air. So that all that pollution that, you know, when you're running on, you know, liquid petroleum, like you run a lot of your forklifts and things
right,
on.
Right, right, right.
Isn't in this contained space where people are working. That was his reason for doing it.
But that statistic, John, I have to come back to it, because that statistic, there's something behind that. The idea that Americans are not allowed to have fuel-efficient automobiles, highly fuel-efficient automobiles. Someone at some executive level is making a determination about that.
Gene even pops in the chat room. He says, you know, what about a wheelchair?
Oh, you know, it could shoot you across the room, Gene.
he'd need those extra wheels on the back like you have on dragster.
Yeah, yeah, the little rails. And, yeah. Watch the wheelies.
And the motor would weigh less than probably the batteries that he has to recharge at the moment.
Oh, I have no doubt whatsoever.
If he has a powered wheelchair.
But again,
you know? It's win-win-win-win-win. Yeah. Why are we not doing this?
Let's put it rather simply, John. It's win-win-win-win-win. So why do we insist on lose-lose-lose-lose-lose? And more,
someone's profiting.
And more to the point, who's making that determination? I know some of this probably happens in the marketing department. Well, you know, the American people, they don't want a fuel-efficient car. They want a big gas car. Blah, 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 blah. Well, we're getting to the point where the American people aren't a-gonna. Now, there are questions that do have to be answered on a larger scale. At this point in time, just because it's the nature of the dynamic in this household, if we want, let's say, to all go out for a hamburger. I've got to have a vehicle that will carry 4 adults, 3 adolescents, and 2 infants.
Phoenix Motor Cars can fill that hole for you.
Well,
completely plug-in electric. They come in SUVs, and they also come in like a pickup truck, extended cab pickup truck. And at the moment, these are being used in fleets only in California, for obvious reasons. You know, it's controlled testing, you know, that kind of thing as they develop. But these things are, you know, you pull into your garage at night, you plug in your just regular wall socket and let it charge overnight, and you have something like 160 miles worth of charge.
And that's where it has to go. But I don't, like I said, I don't know if it's in the marketing department or in the high end of the bean counters offices. But somebody out there saying, you know, we're going to offer fuel efficient automobiles to the rest of the world, but we'll make the Americans pay for it by offering us nothing but gas guzzling junk.
And
that's,
you know,
Nissan. That's Nissan. That's Volkswagen. That's Toyota. That's everybody who's built, even the American automakers who are building them. Those are the people that should be hauled up on charges. If Detroit can make these things and sell them in Europe, why can't they make them and sell them here? I mean, even diesel, John, plain old stinking diesel that can be easily converted toward a biodiesel configuration. My God, Mercedes-Benz built this. I don't know if you've ever seen this bizarre damn thing. It's a 5-cylinder engine that I can't get my... The firing pattern is just Martian. That thing has been a bulletproof 500,000-mile engine since Mercedes started rolling them out eons ago. Mercedes then, of course, for a period of time, obtained ownership of Chrysler. And the only thing that they put a diesel engine in was a Jeep Liberty, which is kind of like a compact SUV. No small diesel cars. No, because somewhere, and I mean, I had to, you know, because I go looking for things, and I test drove one of the Liberties, and I said, you know, why isn't this is a genius little engine that's fully bulletproof? And he said, the American people hate diesel. And I said, well, how do we get a chance to fall in love with it if you won't put it in anything? So, you know.
It's logical arguments just seem to not go anywhere. And it's, you know, it's so frustrating. You know, you mentioned 5-cylinder engine. I believe it was Mitsubishi back in the 90s with their part of the Geo line first released the 3-cylinder compact, and the thing that was what they discovered, real simple, and I bet that the 5-cylinder has some aspects of this. You know, a triangle is the strongest geometric shape. And per cubic centimeter of motor, these 3-cylinders outperformed similar capacity 4-cylinder and 6-cylinder motors as far as torque, acceleration, the whole thing, and the fuel economy was right through the roof. I remember because I bought a Geo Tracker years ago, the very first year that they were released, and the Mitsubishi compact that was the 3-cylinder then was getting 60 miles to the gallon on the highway. Where's that car gone? Because they sold a few.
Yeah. Well, the Geo Tracker got sucked up in a whole bunch of litigation. They have an ugly habit of rolling over and killing everything in sight.
Well, you can still get them here under the Suzuki badge. And, you know, it wasn't like the Samurai, where it was a bad flip-over monster, at least from everything that I knew, because I looked into it. and it had a wider stance, and, you know, I never had a problem with that vehicle. And I you know, I got cut off a couple of times where, you know, I'm going, ooh, if it's going to tip, it's going to be now, and it never even raised. And that thing got, you know, 40 miles to the gallon on the highway then.
But at the same time that stuff was coming out, John, you've got Chevrolet reintroducing the Impala with this honking engine in it. You've got Dodge bringing back the Charger of all things with a Hemi head engine in it, and you know, it makes the, you know, the testosterone. What one? Oh, yeah, I'm gonna burn rubber from here. I'm gonna burn rubber from here to Gauley Bridge, because that's how we've been trained to think about our cars. I want more power. Again, what for?
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand wanting short-term punch power, but there's a trade-off there. If you put too much, if you put too much of that short, you know, that short end of stuff into it, when you stomp on it trying to go from the on-ramp onto the freeway, instead of going onto the freeway really fast, you go onto the freeway really sideways.
Well, and so much of that can be dealt with you know, intelligent gear ratios and transmissions.
Sure, and well, like those diesel engines, the beef on them, the rap on them was always that they were ponderously slow. You could time them out of the hole with a stopwatch, with a sundial. Didn't need a stopwatch. But they cured that by hanging a turbocharger on them, and you know, boom, there it is, and you're done, and boom. I mean, that little Jeep Liberty that I test drove with my dad.
Yeah.
You asked that thing for power, and it went. But aesthetically and with consumers, it went nowhere. So
there I go back to, you know, if you think that petrol is the only way to get performance, explain to me how it is that the Tesla Roadster can go 0 to 60 miles an hour in 3.9 seconds.
Right.
It's just like, hello, facts are there.
And yeah, and I can get a Tesla for less money than I would spend on my one of my beloved Porsches. And it makes it... But good luck, you know. You're up against the oil companies. You're up against the what are now, but you know, the American auto industry put the buggy whip business out of business. Now the American auto industry is being in the process of being of struggling against being put out of business by an auto industry that is not locked into all the tired old crap that the auto industry is locked into, or so we would think in America, John, because it turns out they're not. They're selling this stuff like hotcakes in the rest of the world. We just don't get it. So that leaves me, oil company. Yeah. What else am I supposed to think?
There's nothing else that you can think. And you know, this is where I also have issues with the hydrogen concept, because that's just another thing of trying to keep people stuck to someone's, you know, pump. And then you also have to factor in the fact that there's not enough titanium in the world to be mined to actually make them viable in to the wider community and make them cheap enough. Now, if they get around that problem and are able to do, you know, hydrogen fuel cells without the titanium, then maybe they got something going.
Yeah, because that stuff, the way you get titanium does not come from a nice place. John, we've eaten up 2 minutes of your program. I'm so sorry, brother.
Oh, okay, well, let's go. We got more Aussie music coming.
Okay, yeah, cool. I've got it all loaded up. Thanks, John. This was fun.
All right, man. Thanks, you. Thank you.
It's catching, isn't it? See you on the other side. And so, here's the late, great Lowell George, reminding you to...
You've been holding on to it, and that's true. to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
these
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is that any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Tuesday night or a Wednesday. Is that where we at? Yeah, Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon, all depending on where you are on this beautiful blue marble. Now, it's no longer April Fool's Day here, but in the States, it's still kind of April Fool's Day. But today's show is Fossil Fool's Day. Thanks to some great stuff that Nanette sent to me earlier, and we're going to get to that in a little bit. But, of course, first we have to hit today's track of the day. And continuing on with the greats of Aussie rock theme that I've been going on for about the past week or so, I may have played this track once before sometime in the long, 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 long time ago. It's a track from the Skyhooks. A great Australian band, very, very funny, kind of the Australian larrikin kind of vibe. And you'll probably remember, played on this show many times as a bumper, a track called Horror Movie. Well, that's not what we're going to play today. I'm going to play a track today called What Happened to the Revolution. And this is from the same album, Living in the 70s. Which I've also played the track Living in the 70s, which is rather funny. And, you know, this track being from the 70s kind of looks back at what happened to the rebellious generations of the 60s. And, you know, I hope that, you know, 10 years from now, we're not going to look back at the activism that we've been partaking in over the last decade or so in the same light. But only time will tell. This is just a great track. Really, really kind. They've got a bit of a, I hate to say goofy sound, but there's something comical even to the sound of the band. And just that they were a really great band. And the singer, unfortunately, passed away a few years ago in a helicopter accident, of all things. And I know I've worked with the guitar player, Mr. Red Simons, on a production of the Rocky Horror Show a few years ago. And Red's a really, really funny guy, very smart mathematician. He's also a radio host down in Melbourne. Known has this kind of persona of being the grumpy guy, but he's really not. You get right down to it, he's one of the nicest men you'll ever meet. Very intelligent, very smart. May not have been the most stellar guitar player in the world, but boy, he came up with some, you know, memorable stuff. So without further ado, the Skyhooks from Living in the 70s, What Happened to the Revolution? Roll it, Bob. Skyhooks. Ah, great band, great fun. And I do love that line, kind of reminding everyone, you know, it's post-Vietnam and all that, you know, so, you know, get off your ass and I'll see you out on the street. I think we need to remember some of that. I still keep wondering why we haven't seen, you know, the masses out in the street, you know, Bear Stearns, all this kind of stuff. You know, just madness. Just madness. But anyway, thank you, Red. Thank you, boys. Now, getting on to, thank you, Nanette, for sending me this stuff. This is just too funny. We've got some April Fool stuff for today, and this is just great. From itsgettinghotinhere.org, Fossil Fools Award Ceremony in Charleston, West Virginia. Lunchtime, as usual, was interrupted in the Capitol building of West Virginia today when a spontaneous Fossil Fools Award ceremony began. The ceremony was held to celebrate West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin and coal baron Don Blankenship, receiving the prestigious award of Lifetime Achievement in Fossil Foolery in Appalachia. Unfortunately, neither Manchin nor Blankenship were available to collect their awards in person, but news cameras from several local TV stations were there as stand-ins, accepted the awards in their honor. Unfortunately, Manchin and Blankenship were beat out by Bush and Cheney for the International Fossil Fuels Lifetime Achievement Award because of their hard work. However, we decided to award them a special Appalachian Fossil Fools Award. Our own boys can certainly brag that they've done more than their share for a small state when it comes to advancing the cause of enhancing the profits of big coal at the expense of our economy, our mountains, and our future. If you go to today's show blog, there's a link to some some photos from the event. I think it's great. Activists showed up with 8 foot high with an 8 foot high model of wind turbines and a functional mobile solar panel to show alternatives to fossil fuel use, advocating for a clean just energy transition away from the toxic coal industry that has crushed West Virginia's economy. Several thousand green jobs in wind turbine and solar panel manufacturing are just across from the West Virginia border in Pennsylvania and Maryland. Governor Manchin's insistence on being a fossil fool has not allowed industry like this to employ West Virginia workers. And these people are supposed to be pro-business. I guess it's only pro certain types of business, eh? In here they call him Don Blankenship, has spent $5 million getting his coal cronies into the West Virginia Supreme Courts and state legislature, or at least trying to, as in the last election. 39 of the 40 candidates he funded lost. Blankenship's company, Massey, has a history of union busting, safety violations, and violating water pollution standards more than 4,500 times over 6 years. Massey was recently subject to a $2.4 billion fine for said water violations, but only had to pay $20 million of that. Oh, we can't hurt him now, can we? Massey's subsidiary in Martin County, Kentucky, was responsible for the biggest environmental disaster in the history of the Southeast, when 250 million gallons of toxic sludge were released. Luckily, Blankenship and his friends in high places has friends in high places, as he was recently documented vacationing in Monaco with West Virginia Supreme Court Justice Spike Maynard. And I hear that there's actually some movement on that. Governor Baloney Joe Manchin is trying to line up support for 5 coal-to-liquids plants in the state. Each one of these experimental facilities will cost a couple of billion dollars. To be heavily subsidized by taxpayers in the poorest state in the United States, of course, Manchin strip-mined his own family land to fuel a gob plant there. Combine this with his refusal to help build a safe new school at Marsh Fork Elementary, which is within 300 feet of a coal processing plant and that at the foot of a 2.8 billion gallon toxic coal waste dam. And you see that Baloney Joe is truly a fossil fuel to the highest order. Fossil fuel festivities continued with a less than successful attempt to drop our West Virginia foolie by Manchin's office, but no fear. Climate activists interested in working together on stopping this tomfoolery are invited to a local coffee shop, Taylor Brooks, Wednesday, April 3rd at 5:30 for the movie Everything's Cool. For more information, see, and there's links. This is brilliant, 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 brilliant activism. This is the kind of stuff that I like to see, and I'm glad that the media was there to cover it, and you know, these are the things that we got to do. It's a long fight. Now, on the line of this whole April Fool's thing, Gene sent me a very interesting post from our good friends at ecogeek.org. Spot the not a prank. And there's a poll. One of these stories is true. Which is it? And here's the list. New unnaturally carbonated beverage sequesters carbon in your belly. Number two, U.S. official warns of armed U.S.-Canadian conflict over 400 billion barrel Arctic oil reserve. Three, new Unibatadium LEED certification for greenest possible building practices. Four, new rainbow capturing solar panels are 7 times more efficient than traditional panels. The next one, colony of flying penguins discovered. Then there's hybrid Air Force One is 20% more efficient than its predecessor. Then there is the ever-popular Al Gore running for president. Wind-powered airplane design developed. Which do you think is the true story? I actually got it right, and I was kind of surprised. And they kind of go through them. And this is posted by Hank Green. And he says, I've been clawing my way through the blogosphere today, realizing that many of the things I write on a daily basis are far-fetched, but also true. So on a day when the world is filled with lies, it's hard to identify the legitimate news. So here are 8 green stories that I found today on the intertubes that have no references. Figure out which one you think is true, and then hit the jump to find out if you're right. Obviously, this is, you know, an interweb thing. So he says, okay, I have some bad news. Rainbow chasing meteorologists, a lie. Al Gore running for president, April Fools. Unibatadium LEED certification, unfortunately not. Unilateral carbon beverage, carbonated beverage, no. Though it's worth noting that Coca-Cola does get its CO2 from the petroleum refining industry. Hybrid Air Force One, nope. Wind-powered airplane, uh-huh. Flying penguins, no. But this video that they linked, it was pretty convincing. Indeed, the true news of the day is bad news, and it is also extremely ironic. Burning lots of oil has melted the Arctic sea ice enough that vast new areas of potential oil exploration have been unleashed. These areas are currently not under control of any nation, and so a mad scramble to claim the oil exploration rights has begun. The potential for oil in the region is upwards of 400 billion barrels, more than twice what Saudi Arabia has to offer. Yep, that's right. We burned all our oil just so that we could screw up the climate enough to open up what could be the world's largest oil field. Canada, the United States, and Russia are already fighting over the oil field, leading former U.S. Coast Guard commander to openly worry about the possibility of an actual armed conflict over the oil field. And that's no joke. I wouldn't have believed it if the article weren't published last week. Now, I'm going to follow the link about these oil fields. Scary stuff, eh? A U.S.-based company that has controversially laid claim to nearly all of the Arctic Ocean's undersea oil said Thursday that new geological data suggests a potentially vast petroleum resource of 400 billion barrels. This is from Canada.com. That figure is backed by a respected Canadian researcher who recently signed on as the firm's chief scientific advisor. Las Vegas-based Arctic Oil and Gas has raised eyebrows around the world with its roll-of-the-dice bid to lock up exclusive rights to extract oil and gas from rapidly melting areas of the central Arctic Ocean, currently beyond the territorial control of Canada, Russia, and other polar nations. The company, which counts retired British Columbian Senator Edwin Lawson among its directors, has filed a claim with the United Nations to act as the sole development agent of Arctic seabed oil and gas. The firm acknowledges that the Arctic's petroleum deposits are the common heritage of mankind, but has argued that the polar region requires a private lead manager to organize a multinational consortium of oil companies to extract undersea resources responsibly and equitably. Oh, yeah, I believe that last bit. You know, it should be for the world, but a private entity needs to own and control it, because, as you know, the private sector does everything best. Horse hockey. The Canadian government has dismissed the company's alleged claim over Arctic oil as having no force in law, but experts in polar issues have raised alarms about the firm's actions, saying they could disrupt efforts to create an orderly regime for exploring resources and protecting the Arctic environment under international law rather than a marketplace model. There you go, Bob. Your market's thing. This is scary stuff. We could actually go to war with bloody Canada over more oil to burn, which is one of our major problems now. But we got to go to the phones because we got David from Maine on the line. How you going, David? Welcome to the program.
Good evening, John.
How are you, mate?
I have two stories here that I think you'll find a bit interesting. The first story, it has to deal with different forms of energy, and there's something phenomenal going on that the media isn't covering, that they should be covering. It's regarding a boat called the Suntory Mermaid 2. It's a wave-powered boat, and it's going from Hawaii to Japan. You can go on the, I'll post the link on it, but you can go to the Suntory Mermaid site, and you can read the diary, and you can also track the log of the boat. It's completely wave-powered, and they want to prove to the world that this thing can go for 3 months to its destination without any other alternative power.
I heard something about this a while back, but didn't see much information out there. This is very interesting.
Well, the guy who is taking the challenge is 69 years old, and his name is Kenichi Hori, and he has a really cool site where you can check the navigation of the boat, and you can also see the charts of where he's progressing. So every day you can check in and see where the boat's headed and what he's done for the day.
That's wild.
I know, it's really cool, and they're getting a lot of press, I guess, over it, or a lot of publicity in the boating community world. You know how niches are like. They'll never exceed over the amount that people to a mainstream appeal with the kind of audience that we have now, especially with the fact that we have American Idol and let's face it, sensationalism is our new can now be labeled as science. If you think about it, I mean, when people say, that's amazing, you know, when you start to talk about Paris Hilton's hair bands, you know, that's when you have to check yourself and go, This is damaging everything, especially the people who are doing stuff.
I just found a story about this at The Age, and
well,
they say
if
here.
Well, go to www.suntory-mermaid2. That's number2.com. You can go to the site and you can check the progress. Just go to the English site and you'll be all set. But it's great. Well, I've been looking at it, and this guy to me is a real revolutionary. Because he's going alone in this boat for 3 months, just on wave power.
Give me that URL again.
I'm also going to post it on the forum. My name's Think It Ain't Illegal Yet. For those who don't know, that's a George Clinton quote. But anyways, www.suntory-mermaid2, that's number two, mermaid2.com.
I'm just getting it up here. I want to see this. This is...
Oh, it's great. Bob has to see it, too. I mean, when you guys look at this boat and the everything that they put on there just for people to look at, you get an inside glimpse of this guy's journey, and he posts a diary every day on this boat.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Oh, I know. It's a great thing to do. You know what would be cool? If you could somehow do an interview with this guy, if he has online technology, could you use Skype?
I would think he'd have even a satellite phone.
Right. Well,
you know,
I thought I'd share that story, and I hope people check it out. And because it's also really revolutionary what's happening right now in regarding water technology, and this is they're on a mission. This company, I love the name, Suntory Mermaid. I have no idea what Suntory means, but I know what a mermaid is. Now the second story I have is a heartbreaker.
Okay.
Story is a heartbreaker. We all know, today in music world, Sean LaVert died. Now Sean LaVert is the son of Eddie LaVert. Excuse me. Eddie LaVert is a member of the OJs. This is his second son that he's lost. His second son that he's lost to in within 3 years. So this is kind of a tragedy, and Sean LaVert and Gerald LaVert were both great vocalists. But here is the twist. Sean LaVert had been acting strangely at the Cuyahoga County Jail before he died. Warden Kevin McDowell said in a news release, LaVert was at the jail for 5 days, living among the general population there. He then displayed bizarre behavior and was put in an observation cell Sunday night. He began shouting and pounding on the cell door, so guards put him in a restraint chair without resistance and for his own protection. LaVert's wrists were strapped to the chair and his feet were shackled to the floor. About 20 minutes later, he appeared distressed and was taken to the hospital when he was pronounced dead. And there's more. We've just learned that the LaVert family have asked the Federal Bureau of Investigation to investigate the death of Sean as a possible homicide. Now, Sean LaVert was in jail because he did not pay child support. But the very fact that if this is true, I know that he's passed on, but if this is true, this is just another sign of our criminal justice system, where the justice is not in criminal justice.
Well, yeah, and I mean,
yeah.
What purpose does it serve to jail someone for failure to pay child support? Doesn't that make it totally impossible
I have an easy solution. Just put him in a kids' service, for God's sake, and make him take care of kids to learn the value of family. Five to five. That would drive him absolutely crazy. He would want to pay child support after that. That's what they should do instead of. But again, John, it goes back to, it's a racket on top of a racket on top of a racket, so forth.
We just know with the way that, you know, incarcerated peoples are used to staff, you know, phone banks and whatnot for companies, and they, you know, get to pay, you know, 2 cents an hour or whatever. And, you know, we hear people complain about, you know, the immigrants is taking our jobs. And it's like, no, well, okay, how about the fact that we're allowing companies to pay way below minimum wage to incarcerated people?
Yeah.
You know, for jobs that they could be paying actual, you know, non-incarcerated citizens to do at a real wage. And they get tax breaks to do this crap. So, I mean, the whole law and order system in America has become such an industry unto itself. I mean, this is, this ties into drug laws and, you know, very...